You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
That's so anticlimactic. And hello.
Hello there. It's my NPR voice.
All right, Devin, what are you going to start us off with?
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. That's it.
That's it.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
That's pretty good. I can't do that voice as good as you can.
Can you do it? You can't do it, Jack Nicholson?
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Nope,
no.
No.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's pretty good. Something about like the breathiness or something, or like the raspy breathy. Oh, work and no play makes Jack. Yeah, I can't do it.
You sound like an old wizard.
And that's the end of the podcast.
Thou shalt not pass. Oh, work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
That's pretty good.
So,
well,
I was looking for a quote to excuse me 3D printing toys today.
Excuse you today.
To give myself an out on why I'm sitting here printing toys with my new 3D printer. So I was thinking, well, you know, whatever. It's important to play. Why not do things right. You want to do? And, you know, playing kids is obviously important. And they have the quote of, you know, if you do something you love, basically if you're playing at work, you don't have to work, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah. If you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
Right. Or right. So. Yeah. So then I was thinking of, I guess The Shining. That quote came up in my head.
Yeah.
And I looked. I was like, it's probably from something else, or I'd never really thought about it. It just became such a thing that it was from The Shining. You know, the
right.
thing typed over and over that it kind of became its. But apparently it's a proverb, which they don't really know where it came from. And the it was recorded as early as 1659.
Wow. Dang.
And there was in that was like the first modern saying that was appeared. And then it was in collections of proverbs and sayings. And then some people added to it. One person said, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All play and no work makes Jack a mere toy.
Mm-hmm.
Add a little something. Yeah, I don't know. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the benefits of the channel that we have is that it's things that I love to do, you know? And like and you love to make videos, you know, mm-hmm. Those are both things that we love to do. And so it doesn't ever really feel like work. you know, of course, sometimes it's like, okay, this is another day of filming. Like, we got to do it. Or maybe, like, we got to do the ending and we got to do 4 or 5 or 6 takes of something. And then it feels a little bit stressful. Or not stressful, but, like, a little bit more like work. But really, it's just hanging out in the shop and making stuff. You know, like, and hanging out with you and drinking beers. And
you don't even
have
to drive anywhere.
I know. That's great.
Crew just shows up to your house and disappears. Yep.
I know, yeah. So I'm
call me paying, when you're finished.
I pay for the electricity in the studio, so.
And usually the beer, so, you know.
Yeah, I usually like to. You know. Yeah. But, yeah, that's,
Yeah, play is important. I mean, you got to do it. Right. And that's the whole maker community, people doing stuff.
Right.
Obviously, you go in, and it's such a funny thing to think about. Like, our grandparents, they were makers, but it was more a necessity.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And they enjoyed their craft just as much as modern people do, but we don't have to do it. Right. And there definitely wasn't people like, there was, but no one was collecting toys and waiting to see the newest comic book movie and like these traditionally childlike things.
Right, right.
That have just become such a, I mean, I'm sure if our grandfather played Nintendo when he was 7, 8, he might have been playing video games when we were kids around him. You know what I mean?
Right.
How it's going to be modern days where... Whatever, Uncle Devin plays Xbox with Uncle Drew. Like that's how they chat. It's just it's a real nice way to hang out nowadays when you can't, and it just gives you an easy way to talk. We're not going to call each other on the phone, but we will chat with each other about what's going on in between Halo matches. You know, how's the house you're looking for? Oh, that's cool. You know, it's just the modern way of chatting,
right?
Getting on and playing a video game with someone. But I don't know where I went with that. Just play, you know, it's a little different nowadays because we can do these things. And I was looking for people who didn't listen last week, I got a 3D printer, so I've been watching people building tools. Like we can tell one of the little things I made for you, Dust.
Yeah.
And then I've also been watching like people painting miniatures and stuff. And because I always loved in my head, I always loved those. And one of it was because of our Uncle Jack used to have those painted figurines. Remember those?
Yeah.
Yep. The military guys.
All the Colonial Williamsburg stuff.
Yeah. And I always thought that was so cool. So I'd always had an interest in the back of my head, like I want to paint miniatures. And then we were kids too. I remember hearing about D&D and like Warhammer and stuff, and like you'd see in those game shops, and that was always cool. And I always liked strategy games. So I'm trying to figure out how I can create some type of adult version D&D like gambling strategy game. So I've been thinking about that.
Nice, that's cool. Yeah, that's I think you were saying earlier, like there's a difference between generational like interests, and you can't say that like that one is better than the other, but it was definitely a different mindset from like the older generations. And maybe, like you said, maybe it's just because it wasn't the play was different. You know, there are different things available. Like, you know, they played like outside, they played baseball and like whatever. It was just like normal activity stuff. And then, so some people went on and did that as they got older. And, you know, as they got older, they would do that because that's what they did as kids, you know? So you might have like a softball league, or you might have like an old dude's baseball league, you know? It's like,
right.
They still did stuff that they did as they were kids, but it was just a different type of thing.
Yeah. That's all they had. So, they didn't have digital games to play with. Their
right. Friends. Yeah. So what you grew up with and what you kind of like follow along through your life, it just stays with you. And that's your interests are there because they're nostalgic. So, you know, they might have, like, our grandmother late in life would tell stories about when she was a kid and they would all get together and they would dance. Like, when they were, like, in their early teens and stuff, you know, they'd get together in someone's house and they would just dance to the new music because that's what was there. That's what was fun. And that's that was their pastime. Same way where we used to get together at different people's houses and play video games. Or, you know, like, stay up late at night and, like, play video games, you know, or whatever, you know, or, you know, and so they things change or read comic books or whatever, you know, over the years. So, I think it's just a different, it's always something different, you know, so it's always going to be something different that doesn't exactly fit into what you did when you were a kid, and the next generation is doing a little bit something different, but there's still that play, you right. know, it's got to be something different than what you do every day for work. And, you know, if you can do what you love, then you never feel like you're working. But
right.
I think there's a point, a part of that, that there is, especially for men, like ingrained into us, this desire to work and do something physical and make something or do something or be something. And then, you know, that's like supporting a family. So the goal there is you're doing it because you have, you're supporting something, you know, you're supporting someone or some, you know, a family.
But
so yeah. the responsibility's there. So it doesn't have to be play, right? There's a reason you're doing it. The play is just you do that because it's something you want to do and it's fun. And that's the only reason, right? The reason is you do it because it's fun and it's a release from what you have to do because you have to do it because it's your responsibility.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's why, I don't know. Maybe that's why like man caves and stuff exist, because it's that release from the responsibility of doing something for the purpose of supporting your family.
And I think it's because the wives don't want the big Ravens football poster in their living room. So yeah. they're like, look, you can put whatever you want downstairs. So that's why you end up with a popcorn machine and a like a full size like stormtrooper and like a giant a TV that's way too big. Like,
yeah, right.
It's just all the crap that the guy wants that just doesn't work with a normal house.
Yeah,
do you that's really like, need that? Yeah. Do you need that model of like the Apollo like lander? Like, yeah, it's great, isn't it cool?
It's so cool.
I have a glass. I've got a 10-foot glass case to put it in. Well, I don't know. Throw it in the basement. Like,
the rest of the house is the woman's. Like, I'm gonna do everything that I want. You want this crazy one? This space is all yours. Aren't you so excited to have this one space? It's all you. You can do whatever you want with it. You just leave the rest of the house to me. Like, okay. All
right.
Yeah. I know. I often, like, my wife and I, Nicole and I, we split everything. Like, we don't have separate bank accounts or anything. Like, everything is just in one, right? So, not split everything, but we share everything. So, everything in the house is both of ours. But the shop is still mine, in my mind. And even in Nicole's mind, it's mine, right? Like, it's not mine. Everything down there has been purchased with our money. But right. but it's like my space, and everything is the way that, because I'm down there and I use it and I clean it and I put it back together. And, you know, like, I don't go through Nicole's knitting stuff because that's all of her stuff. You know, that's the stuff that she's interested in, that she controls, she cleans up, she organizes. And if I go into it, then it's just, you know, it's out of the, you know, I'm doing something that's just going to mess something up. I'm not saying
right,
it,
yeah.
like, you know,
yeah.
obviously if I ever wanted to make something or use yarn for something, I could just go in and take something within reason, right? Like, hey, are you using this color for anything specifically? No. Can I use, you know, whatever, some feed of it or something? Sure. And if Nicole obviously ever wanted to use a tool or needed to use a tool, which anytime she's like, hey, can we go down the shop and do something? I'm super excited. I'm like, all right, cool. You want to come down? Yeah. Let's go play in the shop together. But yeah, so, but there's still definitely that like definition of space. Like, that's like my shop, you know, it's like where that's like all the things are down there. I have them all organized the way I want them. You know, if Corinne or Nicole come down and use something, they know they should put it back where it was, because otherwise it's going to upset me. And, you know, sounds like I have it a certain way because I like it that way, because that's the way I use it. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's obviously if it's your partner's hobby or your family.
Right.
If someone in your, if it's their hobby, you leave it alone unless you want them to get a little pissy. But, you know, obviously if they want right. to do something, that person would, of course, do it with you into right. their hobby. Like, yeah, sure, check it out.
Right. Yeah, but it is nice to have that play space, you know, and I feel that way too. It's like when I go down in the shop, it's like a different world. You know, it's like, ah, all right, I'm in the shop, you know. Grab a beer, hang out, maybe like, you know, post something to Instagram, maybe like, clean up an axe head and do whatever, you know, just like putter around, clean some stuff up, make some things, put some things away, you know.
Putter. Is putter a word?
Yeah, just putter around, yeah.
To putt.
To putter.
To be a putz?
No. Putter around, just kind of walking around doing little things.
Okay.
Putter around. Isn't, I feel like something.
I feel like it is, but it might not be.
No, it is.
Well.
I'm just trying to think who would have used it, putter around. It's like more of like a grandparent thing.
Maybe.
Just puttering around the house, doing whatever.
Because they putter.
Because they putter.
So I we'll go into what I've been up to first, since we're already on it. Yeah. The 3D printer stuff. First of all, I'm drinking a Goose Island.
All right.
This one is a Next Coast IPA.
Ooh, nice.
Good stuff. They got nice 15 packs.
Yep.
They always include the shandies, though, which are, I like them in the summer, but in the winter, they're always a surprise.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, lemonade. It's like 19 degrees out. And I'm like, all right, well, whatever. It's what's left in the fridge. I'll have a few shandies.
Yeah.
But I'm drinking out of, I posted something on Instagram as well, the beginning of like a mug, like a, like a medieval, whatever kind of. Tabletop gamey style.
Right.
Koozie thing that keeps your can in it. So I'm drinking out of that, and it turned out really well. And knock on wood, I haven't had any big issues, like spaghettis or things go wrong yet.
Right, yeah.
And I built this. This took 24 or 5 hours.
Whew, man.
And I just left it running. And then, so I'm talking to my buddy Guy about it. And it's his birthday this week, or towards the end of the week. And if we play said, like, games, he's probably going to be one of the guys who come over.
Right.
So I was like, well, okay, I'll make you a mug. And there's this website, I guess I should, that'll be my shout out later, that has free mug designs. You can just drop it in your 3D printer and make it. So he, like, picked out this huge one. It's like so elaborate. It's like, it's called like the merchant's mug, so it has like a belt around it. Mm-hmm. It's like a gold sax hanging out of it. It's got like leather wrapped. I mean, it's all obviously just gray right now.
Right.
But it's like the most elaborate looking cup, double the size of mine. I was like, all right, well, that's the one you want. So that one took like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 more hours than mine did.
Oh, did you make it though? You made it
for me? Yeah, I made it for me. Nice. I was like, all right, it's his birthday. And
that's awesome.
And we'll try. You know, I'll try a bigger one.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so tall that I needed to print out a separate insert for it to fit normal size cans. Like, I think right now it could fit a tall boy can, you know, like a 16 ounce or whatever they are.
Yeah.
So I had, there's a plastic, I'll pull it. Yeah, there it is. It's just a little plastic, like, insert that slides. Into it, slides down. And,
right, yeah, to bring it up that extra, like, 2 inches or whatever, inch and a half. Nice.
So I printed that out, and that turned out great, too. I changed the settings a little bit. There seemed to be more overhangs and stuff, so I wanted a more percentage of infill to make sure nothing fell apart.
Right.
Actually, let me send you a picture real quick.
Yeah, what's his name? Bob from I Like to Make Stuff just posted a video, maybe just today, about 3D printing and printing like stuff for his Land Rover.
Oh, nice!
Pretty cool. So, like, he had like these handle clip or like kind of handles on the side for the recline for the chairs. You know, he like pulled off the handle and it reclines the seat. Whereas, I still had the metal part, but the plastic part had broken off. So he printed new ones of those, and he was like talking about how you would replicate a pattern like that. You know, you like you need this thickness, and you need this thickness, and you need this thickness, and then you need like the depth of this and the size of the hole and all these measurements and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I'm doing with my students right now. My sophomores are doing orthographic drawings of objects. So they're like doing one-to-one scale drawings that are perfectly measured and drawn exactly the same shape. So like if you traced it, but not tracing it.
Right.
And so it's Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Dang, that thing's crazy.
Yeah, so I sent you the pictures. You're looking at them now.
Yeah.
So many more details. Mine just looks a barrel with some, like, strapping around it.
Right.
His is like a pewter cup with a leather belt. And, like, it's like I said, it's got a gold sack and the end of the belt has, like, a metal, like, flourish on it. And there's designs.
Man, that's cool. That's crazy, like, how cool detailed that is. Yeah. I know all of our listeners are enthralled right now.
Yeah.
Off the post to Instagram.
Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, that's crazy. Like the way that there's like the money bag hanging down and the way that like the folds and stuff look. That's right. Great. Yeah. That's really cool. Man. Yeah. That's impressive. So it was my birthday on the 22nd, on the day after. So last Saturday, the day after our last podcast came out. And, so we were away for the weekend and we'll go into that a little bit more, but, this past, what was that? Tuesday. So Tuesday, today's Thursday. This week on Tuesday, we went out to dinner with our family. So my wife and daughter and I, and then Devin and his wife and daughter, and then my brother Drew, his wife and son, and then my parents. My brother Derek was working in Southern Maryland, so he wasn't able to make it up in time, but we all got together, went out to dinner, when we got there, you gave me my birthday gift that you made for me. And so I opened it up like halfway through dinner time and you told me before I opened it, like, okay, open it up. Try to guess what it is. I won't tell you what it is, but you said, you know, if you know what it is, don't say right away. So everyone else can try to guess as well.
Right.
So right. I open it up and I'm taking a look at it.
There's the play. Just add it in whenever you can. Like, oh, we'll make a fun game out of it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I open it up and I'm looking at it and I couldn't figure out what it was right away. Like everyone was looking at it for a while. It was probably like, I don't know, 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, but
before it came
more.
To me. Maybe more, yeah.
Not kind of living with it. Anywhere, yeah, 5 to 20 minutes somewhere.
Right.
Okay, so explain kind of what it looked like.
All right, so the overall shape was kind of the shape of a doorstop. So narrow one side.
There's three pieces.
Yeah, it's three pieces. It's, I would say, maybe 3/4 inch thick or wide, deep. It's maybe 2.5 inches long and 1.25 inches tall, something like that. There's a bottom piece, and then there's a top piece, so they come together, fit really like tightly together with kind of these shapes between the two. And then there's a screw that goes in from the top and holds the two pieces together. So there's a hole in the top piece and a threaded hole in the bottom piece, and they screw together. So it's these two pieces, they fit together. One end's sloped to a really fine taper, the other end's kind of rounded. Yeah, I don't know, just the shape of it. It has, like, one side's kind of like an S-curve where the two pieces meet up and they fit together really well. We would kind of hand it around. Like, Dad kind of thought he knew what it was. We were thinking, like, something to do with, I don't know, I thought, like, something to hold something onto your clothes or something. You know, like, the whole screwing the two things together and pacing together and on. So we kind of, like, passed around for a while and everyone kind of figured it. And there was a couple times you're like, no, let me tell you what it is. I was like, or you're like, do you want me to say it? I'm like, no, I can figure it out. So then you gave us a clue that was, you were like, it's something that I do a lot of, you know, something that Dustin does a lot of. So, I had you narrow that down. I was like, you mean in the shop? And then you said, yes. So I knew, okay. So it's something for the shop, something to do a lot of. And that's all sorts of things, right? I make knives a lot. I do axes a lot. I do all sorts of stuff, shaping things a lot. We film for the channel a lot. So it was kind of a wide range of things, but I knew it wasn't like the other thing I was thinking was like backpacking or camping, right? We do a decent amount of that. Right. So I want to kind of narrow it down. So yeah, so it kind of, we just lived with it for a while and we couldn't really figure it out. I'm just kind of playing with it. And then it hit me, like, then I saw what it was. You know, it was like, bing, it went off in my head. And I was like, I got it. I know what it is. And I was like, it's a sandpaper holder. So you take like a strip of sandpaper that's maybe 5 or 6 inches long and the same thickness or, you know, width as the piece, and you wrap it around the bottom and it goes up over both sides, you know, and then tucks in underneath the top piece that screws down on and holds it in tight. So it's really cool. And the nice, it has the taper on one side, so you can like get a really fine, you know, like sand really close into a fine corner with it, so you have a nice crisp edge, and the other side's rounded well, so you can kind of do like smoother sanding and stuff. And
yeah,
so yeah, that's really cool. So a little like a little fine sandpaper holder jig. So really cool. I'm just, oh, and so I was, that's awesome. I love it. It's a cool little gift. It's perfect. Like a perfect thing to 3D print, you know, like this right. funky shape. Like right. you could like to have that manufactured in like aluminum, you could do on a, like a mill and a lathe, but that's a lot more work, a lot, you know, I don't know, maybe it'll take the same amount of time. Maybe it'll take less time to do it, but it's more work, right? Yeah. Rather than like hit print and go, you know, and you said you printed all three pieces together, like in one.
Yeah. In one I just laid center. Them all down next to each other and it took about, you know, it takes 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool. So yeah, so I'm kind of playing with it throughout the dinner and, you know, whatever we're eating and we're getting ready to go and everyone's saying goodbye and I walk out and we all get in our cars and I was like playing with Finley for a little bit, Drew's son, and we're like hanging out and we drive down the road toward the exit of the Hunt Valley Town Center and I'm like patting my pockets and like, and I asked her, and I was like, hey, can you look in that bag to see if the little sandpaper holder's in there that Uncle Devin gave me? And she's like reaching around. She's like, I don't think so. It's not in here. Mm. I was like, crap. So like turn around, like drive back to the restaurant, go inside. And the, like one of the bus boys is there and he's like cleaning the table. And I'm like, I go and walk past the desk and to the hostess, whatever. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to go and check to see if I left something on the table. Unfortunately, he hadn't cleaned it up yet. And it was sitting right there, like in the little baggie, looked just like a piece of trash sitting on the table. I was like, yeah. So I reached over and grabbed it. He was like, oh man, you got here right in time. I was like, I know. I was like, that would have been gone. I was like, oh no.
Oh, that's
funny. And it was like, that was a decent amount of time. You know, I was like, I mean, the restaurant wasn't packed or anything. So it's not like they were waiting for people to come in, you know, yeah. but it was probably a good, I don't know, 7 or 8, 9 minutes after we left. You know, it's a decent amount of time for them not to have cleaned off the table completely. But yeah, I was like, whew, it was almost gone right when I got it. I was like, man.
You'd be like, can you print me out another?
Yeah, right, exactly. It took 2 hours, right? Yeah. A couple more. I just need a few different ones so I can have different types of sandpaper yeah. going. I like how you said, too. You're like, you weren't exactly sure how big it would be from the images.
You know, right. So.
Because it's like you're looking at the size on the computer screen. And, yeah, of course, you can, like, you know the measurements and stuff. You can see them. But until you actually see it, like, get right. that physical feeling of it, it's hard to tell, you know.
Yeah, it's – especially, you know, you zoom all the way up in on the stuff, and you're, like, looking at it and layering it, and it's – whatever, 7, 8 inches wide on your screen.
Right.
You print it out, yeah. You're like, oh, look at this little thing.
That's so cute.
But, I mean, I just put it on standard, like, speed and resolution.
Right.
So not super detailed, not super slow. And it printed out a screw and a
yeah, yeah, threaded hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That smoothly turned and locked well.
Yeah, I know. We were talking about that. It's pretty impressive, like how well that works. You know, mm-hmm. You print something out like that. So did you print that vertically?
Well, the two pieces that clamp together are on right. their side.
Okay.
Because yep. all they are is, like, if you're looking at that from above, they look like two racetracks.
Right.
And then you flip them and you can put them inside. But so they're just a hollow thing, and they're right. easily built that way. And the screw is sitting on the bottom, you know, the wide part of the screw. And then right. the, whatchamacallit, the...
It's on the base. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's on the base of the screw where the nut would be or where the hand crank is, and it just right. goes straight up. So that's not on the side. So nothing needs supports or anything.
Right. Okay. Oh, so it's sitting on the head.
Yes.
So you had it flipped over, right? So the head was on the bottom, and then the screw was mm-hmm. the whole, like, the shaft of the screw with the threads on it was pointing mm-hmm. up. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's cool. It worked really well. It's like a perfect little fit. Obviously, it's all made out of plastic, so you're not like cranking down on it, but you don't need to. You just need to right. tuck the pieces of paper in there and then, you know, tighten it down so they stay into place.
Right.
Yeah, that's really cool. But yeah, I was just thankful it was still there. We'll have to post pictures off, but we'll do pictures up on Instagram of both.
See if people can guess.
Yeah. Too, yeah, so. If I do. Well, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow in the morning. I'll post it along with the show, information, and see if people can guess before they watch the show or before they listen to the show.
Yeah. But yeah, cool. So did that, and I printed out some more stuff, and then I printed out these two like wall sections. It's like you would use it in a tabletop game, right? Like looking down.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like a dungeon. It's got like a floor and it's got walls. And I printed out one at a higher resolution, and it took about 40 minutes longer, and I sped it up and brought the resolution down to see if I could, if it would print right, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And if it would look any different. Because you can see, you know, you can see the layers.
Right. Yeah.
It just depends how much and how sharp the object you are has. But I think I'm looking at them side by side now. I popped the one off right before we started recording, and I really can't tell the difference.
Hmm.
So as long as they both, like, paint the same, you know, as long as the layers don't show up a bunch more, I'll probably just do that.
Right.
And it's amazing. I mean, for certain things, it's like a craggly rock wall anyway, so it's...
Right, exactly.
You're not looking for totally smooth, so it doesn't really matter.
Right.
But yeah, so those are the types of things I'm trying to dial in. Like, I when I made it, it was a real pain in the butt. Like, there's a bunch of YouTube videos. I mean, the Chinese directions are really, really bad.
Right.
Very simple. Didn't really tell you much what to do. And then all the YouTube videos, they gave you so many more tips. Like, hey, check this. Make sure this is straight. Tighten this.
Right.
This is how you can find out. Because you got to have that X and Y axis, like, tight. And those wheels tight. If anything's loose, it's... I mean, the layers are so thin.
You'll
get all types of issues. So I...
Yeah.
First day, I actually had all day, really, to do it. Like, nice. I was watching Maeve.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin was at work, so I had it spread out all over the dining room table.
Nice.
And I was like, I'm going to get this thing built today, and I hit a snag, like, halfway through. I forget what it was. I just couldn't... I didn't think, okay, the motors going up and down just were really tight. And I thought it was something to do with the vertical screw that runs up and down, that travels up, and the motor spins to travel up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I quit. I couldn't figure it out, and I was going to break some. You know, you eventually start getting, you're pushing on stuff too hard where you're like,
right, yeah.
Okay, I got to figure something out, because I'm really, once I mess something up here, then it's, well, I'm going to have to get a replacement sent from China or something, you know, so it's just like, oh.
Right. Yeah,
I gotta stop my brain. You know, you like get exhausted and frustrated where you start to do things you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I'm like, all right, I'll stop. And then the next day, I was still so frustrated, I didn't want to do it. But I know, I was like, look, if I don't get on it now, that thing's gonna sit half made for who knows how long. You know, because you just go like, I don't want to deal with it. And then I don't want to deal with it comes with you don't deal with it, and it sits there and like. So I jumped on it. I fiddled around, and I got it to where I thought it was good enough. You know, I was like,
yep.
I just got to try it out now. I can't sit here and go back and forth on this one piece that I think should be perfect, but I'm not getting it perfect.
Right.
But, you know, read some things, read online, watched some more videos, and got it up and running, and then printed out the little tugboat.
Nice.
They call it the... what do they call it? What do you call it when you do a test? Oh, benchmark. So it's called...
Okay.
So benchmark test, right? On whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Or a computer benchmark test. It like strains... It's supposed to strain whatever machine you're using. So this has like overhangs and loops and detailed things and walls and a slope on the front of the boat. And it's all supposed to give you an idea of how well it's tuned in.
Right, yeah, because then you can take a look at it and see if these things are messed up. You know, this is messed up, or So it's testing, it's pushing the limit of each of the different capabilities of the machine in different aspects.
So you can see, and you can.
So if this is off, you know your screw's off here or whatever. Right. Or your, Yep.
But I printed that out and it looks great. Like, it's really sharp.
Benchy the Tug.
Benchy the Tug. So that's a great first one. I'm sure anyone who's done 3D stuff knows, and right. probably also has one, because that's like the number one downloaded thing.
Right.
One Thingiverse. Benchy. Nice. Like, you got to have a Benchy. So I got a Benchy, and then I did some cups and some, and I'm doing all types of stuff. So it's been really that's fun. Awesome. And I found my paints, because I had bought some model paints, but I never used them.
Right.
So I'm hoping, I don't know, you tell me this, I think they're acrylic paints. If they freeze up, are they done? They were in the attic.
I mean,
it's not as cold as outside, but it's cold up there.
Yeah. They're probably okay. I mean, you know, there's like, I don't know. So if they are acrylic, it could freeze. I mean, it's not great for it, but... You know, for what you're using, it's not like, you know, you can still use them. You try them out. If they seem like they're working, that's great.
Right.
If, you know, you paint one and after like a year it starts flaking, well, then you had a year of using it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's not like house paint where, you know, if it goes off, you don't use it because you're not, you know, you're planning on painting your house once, you know, so and then leaving it for 10 years or something. So
what kind of overcoat could you put on that to seal it?
There's lots of different mediums that you can paint over top of acrylic. So when you put acrylic down, if you go to any art supply store, you'll see there's like different acrylic layers, like clear acrylic layers that you could put over top. You can spray on or you can paint on that will give different finishes. So you do like a clear acrylic or, you know, like a clear gloss or a matte or, an opaque acrylic, you know, there's things you can put on top that will give you the finish that you want. So usually you're putting that finish over top. Then because it's acrylic, it's a plastic base. So you're basically coating it in another layer of plastic.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, maybe I'll test something small then. Cause I would like to paint these mugs and I'll probably go up to guy and bring him his and maybe we'll paint him up and
nice.
Get him to look cool.
Right on. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that should be an issue. You know, they're small amounts, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that you can, if you freeze, like, big gallons of, you know, multiple gallons of latex paint, they can go bad, but I don't really know much about freezing acrylic. And, like, I paint almost 100% in oil-based paints, in oil paint. You know, I do acrylic for crafts and stuff, so, but... Yeah, all my experiences with painting with oils, and oils don't freeze. So, I don't know.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, and the other thing, did we talk about it, bringing in all the appliances into the kitchen now the French doors are done?
No, we didn't. We talked about the French doors, but not the appliances, because I came and helped you do the outdoor trim.
Right.
I don't think we talked about that in the last podcast.
Which I still need to seal, but we got the trim.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit more work than I thought, but we got it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it was going to be a little bit of like figuring, you know, cause it's the, like, it's that custom fit to each thing. It has to kind of, if you want like flat trim across the front, then it has to step back in to go into the door. Cause the door was a flush with the inside of the house and not the outside. So
we knew
there'd be some funky stuff and the hole in the wall was a little funky and, you know, so. But
yeah.
I think and like cutting long thin pieces of, you know, wood and stuff was all a little bit funky. But I think I think overall it turned out really nice.
Yeah, no, it looks great,
real clean. And,
so I still have to seal it, and I've been waiting for a warm day because trying to do the cracks in silicone and tell you not to do it unless it's over like, you know, freezing temperature. So
yeah, we have not had many of those in the last 2 weeks. Right.
So there was that, and then so finally. The whole reason was because we couldn't get any appliances into the house in the kitchen, and all modern appliances are huge. So, luckily we had already had the money saved to buy the stuff. So we're just waiting. And, nice. So when we did, we got two new, a nice big open, French door style, refrigerator with the freezer under, you know, the big freezer below. Okay. And then, got a new electric stove, both Samsung, both kind of, you know, stainless steel look, and it's nice.
Nice, right on. Yeah. That's awesome. So the door was successful. Fridge door, they get appliances in.
The guys did not want to deliver the fridge. They were not happy because it was snowy out.
Right.
And it like comes up and it froze overnight.
Right.
So it was really slippery to get in the back. But I was like, you know, that's where it is. Like, you can't get through here. They have to deliver it. I mean, they probably could have said no by some law, you know, by like, hey, it's dangerous. We didn't want to hurt ourselves.
Yeah.
But I kind of convinced them, and I actually wish I didn't. They were slipping around so much. I didn't have any cash to give them a tip or anything. I know I did, but I found like $4 or something. I had a few ones. Like, it was almost, I was like, I told my wife, I was like, I don't know. It's almost insulting.
I know, right? Exactly. I'd rather give nothing.
She was, but then it's just like, I guess it's better than nothing. I was like, yeah. Maybe they can buy a soda on me or something.
Yeah, like, right, exactly.
I guess it's, having a little extra at the end of the day might add up, you know, whatever.
Hey, I mean, that's their job. Right? Their job is to come. I'm not the whole the tip thing. I just mean, like, it's their job to come and deliver it into your house, right? So if your entryway is around the back, it's not like your house is not giant. So it's not like they had to go very far.
Right.
Just walk around the corner.
It could have been an apartment on the third
floor. Right, exactly. Right, yeah. Or it could have been, like, you know, a multi-level house where the front door is up at the top of the hill, and like, you have to go down the hill and around the back, in the back, and up some stairs.
Every townhouse now, where you walk in and it's 10 steps.
Yeah, right. Split level where you have to go up or down. Right.
That's true. Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is, but that's their job. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying that, you know, they'd appreciate a tip, and you know, it's always nice to give a tip when you can to tell people you do appreciate their work, but you know, it is their job to put it where you want it to go, and that wasn't too unreasonable. So
yeah,
so that's cool. Nice.
We did that, and we actually spent even more money. Now we were broke. We bought a new couch.
Nice.
But that was another thing we were kind of waiting on. Even though I think we could get the couch through because we already got other couches through. But
right, yeah.
Bought a new couch. Finally, we just got tired of looking, you know, for like the perfect couch, and finally found one. And it was like, that's fine. Like, however long it takes. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Did you get it in? Like, did you get the couch in the house already?
Nah, it's on order, like, gotcha. Everything. So, you know, 8 to 14 weeks.
Yeah, like, right. That'll be like Drew's saga. And he talked about on the podcast the whole, like, it'll be ready for you in October. It's like, okay, now it'll be ready for you in November. Well, you know, now it's December. Wait, now it's not going to be ready till the end of February. Like, whoa, what? It's crazy. So hopefully it's not like that.
Yeah, so we'll see. It was, and one more thing funny about that. I didn't even ask for the good guy discount. I guess I should have.
But, oh, man, yeah. Good guy discount.
It's a little bit harder in person, you know.
Yeah, right.
But we had seen the price, and we had liked it. Like, okay, this is a good price. That was under what we were thinking.
Yep.
And then, so we're pretty much already locked on it. We're just, like, looking for a salesperson, right?
Yep.
And then my wife's like, well, let me see if there's any other colors, because this color's nice, but maybe there's something else. And she looks online, and it's, like, $200 cheaper online.
Oh, geez.
On their website. So we just told them that and said, okay, yeah, we match those prices, obviously. So I was like, man, if she hadn't looked, we would have just paid, you know.
Extra $200, yeah, right.
Because
right.
It was already under what we wanted. I was like, all right, should always look online.
That's crazy, like how, like,
because they're all, it's all shady, right? It's the furniture is like used cars.
Right.
Or not cars, just a car dealership.
Right.
You never know how much stuff should be. Mm-hmm. It always takes too long. They always go to talk to someone else. Hey, let me get this person to fill this out. They make you sit there and wait. It's the same racket.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, jeez. Yeah, it's just like, it feels grimy, you know, like it's just a pool of dishonesty.
And then, yeah, and then they hit us with, like, at the end, like, delivery fee. Well, they give you a total.
Right.
Right. With everything, it's going to be this. Then I have to ask, okay, why is it so expensive?
Right.
You got to break them down. Like, okay, what is this? What is that? No, we don't need $150, like, you know, repair fee, you know, that type of thing. They're always trying to hit you with some warranty thing.
Yeah, right.
They want an extra, $170, $150 or $175 for that. You know, like, no, take that off. Like, Like, what are you going to do? Bring someone over to sew it, or are you going to take our couch for six weeks?
Yeah. Be like, what if something goes wrong with my couch, you're going to take it anyway because it's like, yeah, right.
Right. Jeez. But yeah, oh, if there's a spill on it, I'm like, well, then there's a spill. Like, it's a couch. Like,
yeah, we'll take care of it.
Yeah.
I'll rent a, you know, a furniture cleaner for 20 right, bucks for right. the day, and I'll clean it. Yeah. Jeez.
So knock on wood, I don't have a story in 13 like, weeks. Like, oh, Caitlin, Maeve, my daughter had a knife and sliced it open and. That I ran over to her with a glass of red wine and spilled that on it. And the baby puked out of fear. It was crazy.
Fear.
Wish we had that warranty.
$175 would really be nice right now. Now we're looking at another $1,200 couch.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the silliness I've been up to.
That's character, right? Those things. Like, that's oh, yeah, right. That's the spill. That's,
remember that?
When Maeve stabbed the couch and I spilled the wine and she threw up on it. And then we had to flip that cushion over, and that's why this one's a little funny.
Right.
It's all just stories.
That's right.
It's like marking the height of your children on the door frame.
Yeah.
That's and when that's, this happened.
And that's what we say. We also save that, too.
Yeah, right.
From the slider. That was, yep. It was, you know, this, the for, no, they don't know. I bought our parents' house, so
right,
yeah. All the grandchildren were measured out there for the last 10, 15 years or 15, right. 14 years.
Yeah.
So we saved that bit. And actually, we thought when my dad came over, we thought, like, oh, no, we must have thrown away because we couldn't find it.
Oh, the other piece.
But
yeah.
We remember, had one piece, we were looking, piece, but we just yeah. had kind of forgot what edge it was on because we were kind of looking at the wrong. Right. We were looking for the wrong thing, basically. And
yeah.
Found it. So that went home. With nice. Our parents, so I'm sure he'll nail that up on the shed somewhere.
Yeah. One day. I know, and I told him, I gave him the measurement. Like, Drew and I made a mark on mm-hmm. it. We measured from the floor up 3 feet. I made a mark on it at 3 feet. So that way mm-hmm. when he gets to his house, because the trim at the bottom wasn't exactly on the floor.
Right.
So
right.
it's not like you can just put it on the wall and put it on the floor. Then you're down like a half an inch. So all your measurements
right.
that are off.
Right.
So now he can you know dial it in to the right height, so that way as he's still marking, as Maeve and Finley and Gabriel and Abigail and Corinne, as they continue to grow, they'll still get marked up at Grandpa Pop's house. It's fun.
So
I mean, for me, I was saying last weekend we went, Nicole and Corinne and I went to outside of Harrisonburg, Virginia, which is not quite Southern Virginia, I guess kind of middle of Virginia, off of 81, which if you're not familiar with Virginia, Virginia is south of Maryland, and it goes all the way from the East Coast inland, you know, quite a ways. It's a pretty big state. 81 runs, further inland near the Blue Ridge Mountains, which are part of the Appalachian Mountain Range. And so we went to a little cabin outside of Harrisonburg, which is about halfway down the state. And we took the day off on Friday. So I took my wife and I took off work, and then we took Corinne out of school for the day and headed over and had lunch and did a little bit of like antiquing that day, and then went in and stayed in this really cool little cabin, which was, it was like a one room cabin, two floors. So you had one room downstairs, which is kind of an open concept kitchen, dining room, living room, and then I guess a bathroom that was a separate space. And then kind of a cool kind of half spiral, half regular staircase that was metal and wood that went up to a second floor. And up on the second floor, it had just a bedroom. It's like a single bedroom. And then this kind of little nook. So probably maybe five or 6 feet deep and 7 or 8 feet long, this little teeny kind of room that's like in a little overhang type thing, with a small door, and inside there they had a little single bed. So Corinne stayed in there, which she loved because it had these little curtains that could close it, and a little like octagon window that looked out. She brought her little lantern and had that in there with her, and had her little like cozy little bed nook, which was fun. And so we had that room upstairs for Nicole and I, and downstairs had a a TV with internet, so we were like, we just kind of logged. I think I logged into Netflix just so we could watch some stuff. We watched a bunch of Seinfeld, which was fun. We just like for I think all day on Saturday or not, while we were in the house, it was kind of, I think we end up watching like 10 or 11 episodes, just kind of in a row. It was kind of in the background.
Did Corinne find it funny?
Yeah, she really liked it. Yeah.
Nice.
At one point, she like went upstairs and she like, it was getting late and she like wanted to come back down and continue watching Seinfeld. But then it was the end of an episode and I was going to watch something else or something. So she was like, oh, we're not watching Seinfeld. And she was like, okay, I'm going back upstairs. And she like went up and like was playing on her Switch or something in the little room. But yeah, she liked it.
She's like, that fun. Kramer guy's goofy.
The whole, was it Joe DiMaggio or what's the episode where there's the baseball player who dunks his donuts? Was it Joe DiMaggio that they talked about? And Kramer's like, he was trying to get his attention, so he's banging on the table.
Yo.
That episode, I was like, that's a good one. It's a classic.
Yeah.
But that was fun. We bought a game called, I can't remember it off the top of my head. It's like,
Scrabble.
No, it's a survival game. So you're put into a scenario where you're in a plane with the other players and it goes down in the middle of the woods. Mm. And you have to survive a certain amount of nights before you're rescued. And so each you crash and it starts with nighttime. And you have these nighttime cards. And so you determine how many nights you want to try to survive when the game starts. So if you want to do, it's like, if it's easy, it's 8 nights. If you're doing medium, it's 12. And if you're doing hard, it's like 16, right? So you set up your nights and you shuffle up the cards and you put in a rescue card at the end of the deck within the last 3 cards. And then each night something happens and you have to like survive it. So you start off with some amount of hearts, you know, you can have a total of 6 hearts. So like you read the card and maybe one night, like, you know, it's a giant rainstorm and everybody loses a heart. Right. And the next night, maybe like wolves come in and they attack your party and everybody loses 2 hearts or something. You know what I mean? So
the third night, the pilot tries to eat your flesh out of
exactly.
Hungry.
Yeah. Well, there are. So there's like,
there are cannibalism.
Well, there are cards. I think they're called hysteria. So at the end of each night you do a health check. And if you have 1 heart left, so if you only have 1 heart left, then you get a hysteria card. Mm. I think it's called hysteria. And then you have to do what's on that card. Some things you like do right away. Some things are lasting like the whole game. Like you're like losing your mind. So you're calling everyone else's names. Like you're calling everybody else by like the color of their shirts or something. And you have to do this like thing. So like you have to, so it starts being funny. Like there are different things where you challenge different people or you steal different people's items and stuff. And so then there's like nighttime and then daytime. And then during the daytime, you can go and forge. And there's always like forge cards where you can go through and you can find berries and you can get random wood and things to make things. And so it's a cool game. It was really fun. Corinne found it. We went to this little indoor kind of market type thing and she found it and was like, oh, I really want to buy this. And so I think it was like $25 or something. So I was like, well, I'll split it with you. So she and I split the cost of it and it was fun. So we ended up playing that like 4 or 5 times over the weekend and went out to dinner or went out to lunch once and took a nice hike at one point as well, which was fun. We just kind of went along down the river and I actually took some pictures of like the journey knife while we were out and doing different stuff and posted those on Instagram. And while we were out, Corinne had like kind of climbed up this cliff type thing and I'd walked up around and Nicole was kind of down below standing on this like glacial erratic boulder type things that had kind of was down, you know, it might have been like 6 or 7 feet tall. And so she kind of climbed up one side of it and was standing up on top of it and taking pictures of Corinne up the hill and dropped one of her gloves because she had taken her gloves off to take pictures with her phone and dropped one of her gloves. And she looked down and like right where she dropped it, there was this like 8 by 8 inch hole in the stone that went like straight down all the way to the bottom. So she was like, oh, she's like, I just dropped my glove and it went right in this hole. So for the next like half an hour we were working on trying to get her glove back out, which we ended up finding like a crack in the bottom of the rock where we could see inside and we kind of fished it out. And while that was happening, Corinne slipped and fell and got a big gash in her knee, and so she's bleeding all over the place. And so we like went back to the house. We were gonna go like take another walk, but we decided not to. And I was like, well, I'm gonna go out and, you know, go around and look for some more antique shops and stuff, and go like hunting. So hunting for deals. So Nicole and Corinne were like, okay, have fun. You know, they're like, we're good. So they stayed behind, and I went around. I ended up finding some cool stuff. I went to a couple different places. I found let's see. I'm trying to think in chronological order. The first thing I got actually when we were driving in was this little a square, like a Stanley Rosewood, just a square. Like I guess they're called cloverleaf square, so wooden handle with the metal square top. I have a small one that my dad gave me. That's like a 4-inch one, and I found basically the same version of that, but a 6-inch version of it. So I got that for a couple bucks. I got a, let's see, I got two hammers. One is like a 2.5-pound ball peen hammer, a plum ball peen hammer. So it's a nice heavy one with like an original, like kind of vintage 70s red fiberglass handle. So that's in good shape. I got that. I got a 3-pound Mason's hammer, which at the time I didn't know was a Mason's hammer. And I just thought maybe it was kind of like an older blacksmithing hammer. But it's kind of, it's tall and narrow the way kind of an axe head is tall and narrow. But it's maybe an inch wide in the face of it, maybe like 3 inches tall by an inch wide. And then the whole head of the hammer is maybe 4 or 5 inches deep. And then on the backside, it's like a straight peen. So it's got just like, you know, it comes together in a point along that full edge. So I mean, it was kind of on a loose handle, so I'm definitely going to rehandle it and use it for blacksmithing, because I think it's a good, like, nice long face that I think has the potential to be kind of a interesting use, you know, purpose-built hammer. So it's for masonry. It's for, like, you know, breaking and hitting stones and things to crack them in a long seam. So that's why it's got that kind of long format. But I think it'll be fun. Nice. I got those. I got a Council Tool Hudson Bay axe, which I posted on Instagram, and that was kind of cool. So walking around, and you know how like in different antiques malls there's always kind of like the Harbor Freight booth, you know, that's like just the booth with all the new stuff, like all the new tools, but they're all discounted, or they're kind of the cheapy things, you know, and you can get them for $5 instead of $8, you know, or whatever it is, you know. So kind of was walking through one of those, because they're always kind of interesting. You might find a few things here and there. And I think there were three of these Council Tool Hudson Bay axes. So I picked them up, and they had a little label on them that was like, you know, $20, you know, new for $60 from Council Tool or whatever. So I actually went on the Council Tool website at that point, because I was like, because it has a, at what at the time I thought was just yellow plastic handle. Now to me, it looks and feels exactly like yellow plastic and not fiberglass. But I posted on Instagram, and both Brandon Roost and Craig Roost, so Brandon's Whiskey River, and who they sell Council Tool axes, and then Craig Roost, who works for Council Tool and helps develop their axes, they both said that it's fiberglass, that handle. So maybe it's like a fiberglass core with a plastic around it to protect, you know, the user from the fiberglass on your hands. I'm assuming that's what it's got to be, because it's like, because it was a little bit, you know, like the casting of that piece of plastic was not that great. So it had some ridges and some bumps and stuff. So I sanded it all down with some sandpaper, some kind of rough sandpaper, just to kind of get all the stuff off, but then put a little bit of grip back into it. And it's really nice. So I was like, I looked online to see their prices, and sure enough, like any of the Hudson Bay axes from Whiskey River or from Council Tool are all about like $60 or $70. So Craig and Brandon both confirmed that it would have been a Baco company. So they bought a bunch, or like commissioned Council Tool to make a bunch, and, you know, they put their own handles on them and sold them separately. So I think Brandon said it was like 2020 actually that maybe Baco went out of business and sold big lots of a lot of their stuff. So that might have been how they ended up, that this place got a couple of them or whatever. So I picked up one and sharpened it up last night, sharpened up really nice, because it's still the same Council Tool head.
Right.
It's just on that yellow handle. But I kind of like it. 22 inches, it's like kind of slim, feels kind of vintage. Like it was definitely based off of an older style handle. It's not like a big chunky handle like a lot of newer stuff is. So I think I might leave it and just use it for a while, because, you know, it's not going to get damaged by water or you know, humidity or anything. Like if it doesn't come loose and it stays on its head and it doesn't sit proud, it kind of sits down inside of the eye at the top and it's filled in with like a black epoxy or something. So if it stays fine on the head for a while, the one thing that's a little off is that it's not hung. The edge of the blade isn't parallel with the handle. It's a little askew, you know, so that's one of those things when you're hanging a head, you want it to be like straight on the eye. So that way the blade is directly parallel in line with your handle. It runs straight up and down the handle. So it's a little bit off, which I really noticed when I was trying to sharpen it, because one side, you know, the blade, the bearded end of it, the heel of the blade was kind of, I could see it sticking underneath a little bit. So it's a little bit harder to sharpen, but it was fine. So I'm kind of excited. It's kind of a fun test, you know, and I posted the comment about it was like, I might as well use it like this and try it out and see how it works before completely discounting it, just because in my mind, it's not as good.
Right.
Not because I've never used one before, because I haven't. I've never used an axe with a fiberglass handle, you know, right. Like I've only used wood because that's what I like, you know, that's what but I like that because that's what I've seen and that's what I know and that's the feeling, and I like being able to customize the fit and I like the way they fit together, and I like the idea of the wood and metal sistering together and being something one, you know, coming to one, but not because I have experience using it.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'll use it, and then if it feels horrible, I'll cut it off and put a wooden handle in, and if it's fine, then I'll just leave it and I'll use it that way, and I can throw it in the back of the truck or something and I don't have to worry about it ever, you know, getting loose or anything, hopefully, or at least I'll test it out, then I'll know.
Yeah.
So
that'd be cool. Yeah. It's just something different. You got a collection of axes. You might as well
right.
A few, you know, newer style ones just to, you know, it's something.
Yeah, right. Just try it out. Might as well. You know, it's like, it's not going to hurt me to see what it's like.
Right. Next thing is, well, can you 3D print an axe handle?
No infill on that one. It's got to be right. Solid.
It has to be pure solid. Or maybe, well, it depends. See, the infill.
It depends, yeah.
The infill, you can do like 15 different patterns.
Right.
So one might hold the pancake layers better together. Right. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah, so that was cool. I'm excited about that. I haven't used it yet, but I sharpened it up. It should be good to go. And let's see, I got the last two things I got was a 26-inch boys axe handle that I picked up. It was $5, and I think it might be oak, and it's got these like these little pin knots and stuff in it. So it's not the highest quality handle, and the grain orientation is not great, but it's really pretty looking. You know, it's like, it's got cool looking grain. It's got a little like character to it. And it was only $5, where normally a boy's axe handle would be anywhere between, you know, 12, 15, 18, and then more if you're paying for like, you know, higher quality handles.
Right.
So for $5, it's definitely worth it. I'll put it on one of my boy's axe heads and, you know, hang it, and I'll custom fit it and stuff. You know, I'll shape it because it's a little clunky, but it's like, you know, it's a nice, it has a real nice big eye, like a real wide eye. So it's like, has a ton of material that I can, you know, modify down to fit really well. So that was cool. And the last thing I found, which is really cool, was a big chisel. So I got a 1¾-inch wide, chisel from the company JW Mix and Company. And I tried to find some information on them, and I couldn't really, I think I found one image, and I can't remember exactly the date now off the top of my head, of course. Maybe it's this one right here. That's that. But it doesn't really tell me the date. But yeah, cool. Like a really nice handle. It has a socket. You know, it's a socket chisel, so, you know, it's got the socket and the wooden handle going into it with a little spacer on the back, a little leather spacer. So it's definitely designed to use with a chisel. I mean, with a hammer, you know, like a carving hammer, or, you know, a joiner's mallet, something like that. But yeah, really nice. I wire wheeled it last night, and just, again, if you like old tools and you don't have some type of wire wheel to clean off rust, it's so fun and like rewarding, because it really takes no time, and you just like wire brush it a bunch and then it's like clean. So if you don't have a grinder, like a bench grinder, you know, and you have like a 4-inch angle grinder, you can pick up wire cups and stuff. It works just the same way. So really nice. Depending on the steel you're working with, if it's like softer stuff, you know, if you're working with something brass or all, you can get different types of wire wheels with different material. You can get like a brass wire wheel or steels or whatever. So, but yeah, it's like, it's a pleasure to use when you just like kind of clean it off. So that was nice. I cleaned it up and it's really good. It's got a nice edge. I'll have to, like, it's not sharp at all and it's got a few little teeny dings and stuff. So I actually have to do some work to get it sharp, but it looks really nice. I couldn't tell from the wire wheeling if it's laminated, you know, so if it has hardened steel on the bottom and softer on top. I couldn't see any line just from the wire wheeling, so, but that'll definitely show up when I sharpen the edge. If it's, a lot of older ones were laminated, so instead of using like tool steel for the whole body, they would use a high carbon steel on the bottom and then softer steel on top and laminate together. Just that way you get the actual cutting edge is hardened steel. But not the whole thing. So, but yeah, that was it. So I got a couple things, really happy about all of them. They're just like fun, different things. I'm always like, my goal when I go into vintage shops is, my first goal is always axes. Like, that's what I'm always looking for. I'm always looking for like the really cool axe and the good deal. But just tools or really anything. A lot of times I'll find myself like breezing through really fast places and then like not looking. And then I'm like, oh, there are other cool things that are old, not just tools, you know? So and I'll like slow down a little bit and I'll look for some stuff and I'll start thinking of like what something that like Nicole would like, you know, or like something that Corinne would like. So I'm like kind of slowing myself down and I'm like, all right, well, these are kind of cool. Like, you know, so we found some stuff, but
it is nice to have a few goals, you know?
Yeah.
'Cause when you see it, it's great. Like,
yeah.
And right, we need a little box this big with some drawers.
Right, exactly.
You're looking at like, oh, look at this perfectly.
Yeah, and you know, and when like we're stopping at like the third antique store, and Corinne and Nicole are like, okay, we're doing another antique store, and like then I'm just looking for my goal things, you know, like it's just like running up and down aisles, just looking and you know, looking in corners, looking for axe handles or tools or whatever. But man, there are a lot of really expensive retail priced axes to be had if people want to pay full price. Because like at all the places that I went to, there were like one or two booths that had you know, nicer tools, you know, like planes and things, and they'd have like six or seven different axes and there are different degrees of people's understanding of like cleaning up a tool. So some people would like, you know, they'll like clean it up and then they'll put like a coat of varnish over an axe, you know, so it's like shiny and like they're like, right. Oh, $60 for this, you know, vintage axe head, and it's like the whole, you know, toe is ground off and it's like no markings on it and it's all mushroomed. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, it's like no one should buy this, you know, like that's unless like you have a wall of axes that's like just a display and you don't care really to use them, you just want to have them because they look cool. Like, I guess that's fine, but yeah, that's not what I want to pay. I want to find like the rusty one that's just sitting on the counter or on the shelf because they found it in the barn and here's $5 or $10 or whatever for it, you know, like that's what I'm looking for. That feels fun to me. You know, that's the like, yeah, winning the prize, the getting thing. Like, now, obviously if I found something like that I've been really looking for and I see a good price on it, but it's like kind of expensive, that might be different, right? Because that's like a goal thing, like a white whale type thing. But, you know, yeah, or like a really good one that's really well sought after.
Right.
You know, then people do the research.
Yeah, but you never see it. And so you'll pay full price or even a little bit more just because you found one.
Right, exactly. But when I see like the heads that I've purchased over the years for a couple bucks here and there for like $60 or $70, you know, and they're not in even like good condition at all, I'm like, that's ridiculous. But
okay,
if the market's there.
Here's a question before we go. If you find a Black Raven.
Yep.
That's what it's called, right?
Yep. Kelly. Black Raven.
So if you find a Black Raven.
Yep.
What is the max you would be willing to play? Let's say it's in good shape. Like not it let's say it's like your dream Kelly Black Raven.
Right.
I mean, obviously, right now with that, as it being one of the most popular axe heads to buy, you could turn around and sell it for a certain amount. So that doesn't even count, almost.
Right.
Because, you know, you can spend, let's say, whatever you spend, 800 or whatever high amount it is, because you know you can sell it back. But what is the max you would pay to get your hands on one?
So, like you were saying, of course, if I saw one for $100, I know that I could sell it for $600, right? So I can make $500 right off the bat. So that's a different mindset. But if I was going to buy one to keep...
And it's like, it's pristine. Like, it's one of the, it's great. But not so pristine that, you know, it hasn't been used and it's real.
Right. Yeah. It's good condition. Like,
it's a great example of what it is and
what I want. I probably would pay, I don't know. I'd have trouble paying more than, say, $150 or $200.
Really?
Like, because.
But even, I mean, you've seen them. We've all seen them for crazy amounts of money.
I know.
You could throw a handle on it and get, what, between $5 and $1,000?
Well, I know that. Yes, of course. If there was one, like I said, if there was one that I knew that I would buy and sell, then I would pay more for it. But I'm thinking just for myself to buy and keep.
Right.
Like, so it's a different mindset. I don't think that's
an expensive thing to have.
Yeah,
have if you're going to keep it.
Right. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is I would have a tough time using a Black Raven.
Right.
You know, like, because it's such a cool stamp, you know, and, like...
It's kind of just, it's to have, to have in your collection.
Right. And, the enjoyable part of collecting axes to me is getting the good deals. That's part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but like you said, yeah, of course, if it's a white whale, like, to me, I would struggle to pay more than $200 for something that I was just going to keep for part of the collection, you know, for me, the goal is to find one in the wild, as they say, you know, not online, not, you know, just find one out there and then have it. And that's what you found, which is what everyone's looking for. Right. You know, it's like you found the gold mine that everyone's been looking for or whatever, the treasure. That's more appealing to me than having one, like, you know, buying one for now in the wild could also be in an antique store, right? If I found one in an antique store for $100 or $200, I might buy it. If it was in a really good condition and it was like $300, I probably would buy it and sell it. You know, if it was in mediocre condition.
Yeah. So it hits a price.
Yeah.
Where you'd say, well, this is too expensive just to keep as a
as a
hanger, a wall hanger. But
that's the key. Yeah.
If I put a handle on it, I can make $300.
Right. Like for buying something just to keep as like a wall hanger as part of the collection, I would struggle with paying out of pocket and not getting any money back more than like $200.
Right.
But because that one's so cool, and it's funny. Like when I first got into axes, I joined a few different places and I went on to like different like Bushcraft USA and knife forums. And I started finding axes there. And then I joined Axe Junkies and started seeing, you know, axes there and stuff. And occasionally the Black Raven would pop up. And that was like before I knew what the Black Raven was. I just saw like this really awesome stamp. And I've always loved crows. And so that, like, obviously resonated with me right away. I was like, oh, it's the Black Raven. That's, like, my bird. That's super cool. And I remember having a conversation with Sean early on when he started getting into axes because he had seen what I was doing and kind of, like, he liked the appeal. And so he was started getting into, like, buying and collecting some. And I think we had a conversation kind of early on. It was like, all right, what's your white whale? What's my white whale? Like, if we find it, you know, will we buy it for the other person or whatever? And that's when I was like, yeah, mine would be the Black Raven. And I forget what he said his was at the time, but it was something
also
different.
The Black Raven. So it's a watch.
But that was the thing at the time. Like I didn't really even know that was like a big thing. It was just, it was the stamp that I really liked because it appealed to me because I really liked the bird, you know, and it looked really cool, which is the reason why everyone loves it. Right. Cause it looks really cool. Cause there's no other stamp like that. It's really awesome.
Right. It doesn't necessarily axe better than other axes, which it wasn't the highest, right?
It wasn't the highest line.
It was
kind of just the standard. Yeah. I mean, the Kelly Perfects and the Kelly Registered is their top of the line. So that's like, you'll see Kelly Registered and then they have a rectangular block and they're all hand numbered by like which ones were. So the Kelly Registered was their top of the line. Collins had like their bonded The Plum Champions were like their top of the line. So the Black Raven was kind of just a middle of the line. It was in there with like, you know, the Kelly Perfect and the like Vulcans and like I've got some different ones, but you know, they definitely weren't top of the line. They were just a standard axe, but just everyone was doing awesome, you know, stamps back then. And that one just ends up being the one that people love nowadays because it really is super just cool looking, just a beautiful pattern. And this, and like an actually stamped into the steel, like, so it lasts forever. You know, that's like super cool. It's a, just a fun thing. So
that's, obviously if you did get one, because you'd also, even if you paid a lot and you were going to sell it, we could definitely do a video on it.
Oh yeah.
That'd be the fun part. But you could do something ridiculous with it just to get views. Like putting a plastic
chopping wood with a, putting a plastic handle
on a Black Raven, you know, something just to, hey, I got to get the on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like put a fiberglass handle on it and like use it to chop up some firewood. And then
to,
at the end,
use it to chop roots out of the ground.
And then at the end, I'd have to like restore it again and put a wooden handle on it and be like, all right, now all is well.
Don't worry.
This will Everyone's like heart is beating. All these like axe nerds are like, oh my gosh.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Yeah. So fun times. I found some cool stuff. Always fun to be out there looking. And, you know, I like the Hudson Bay axes are cool. So that's fun. I'm glad I got one of those, a council tool. It's, it doesn't have a date stamp on it now. They've been doing the date stamps on their axes, which is really cool. So I have like the council tool stamp on one side and the other side has USA and then a date next to it. So it doesn't have the date on it, but it's still like a nice deep stamp on both sides, council tool and USA. And if nothing else, like if I don't like the way that the handle feels, I'll just pop it off and I'll, you know, like it's got some black paint on the head too, which, you know, in the whole theme of it being like being able to be left outside or preserved and not, you know, go bad, the black paint and the plastic handle are both things that aren't going to, you know, rot or rust. So I'm happy to leave it as long as possible. And like I said, if I don't like the way the handle feels or, you know, it doesn't live up to what I want it to, then I'll just cut it off and grind off all the paint and put it on a really nice, you know, wooden handle and have like a nice premium, you know, Hudson Bay Council Tool axe.
There you go.
Yes, sir. It'll add in my third Hudson Bay axe that, is it three? One, two? I have the Collins Legitimus, and then I have now the Council Tool. Oh, no, I have a Snow and Neely Hudson Bay, and then I have the small Norland. So I have four, and they all are all the other three, all except for the little Norland. The two full size ones both got loose on their handles, so which is like notorious for Hudson Bay axes because they have those really short eyes. You know, the taller the eye, the more wood that's inside the eye, and the better it should hold on. So they got those short eyes, and they've all gone loose. So got to hang them all again. I'm putting more wedges in them.
Slam, put that nail right in the middle of it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Do all the
couple nails in.
Do right, what I would do.
Keep filling it up.
Get it tight. All right.
It was kind of cool, actually. Brandon Roos just put out, he just put a post up on Instagram for Whiskey River talking about their new little, I think it's called their 11C, so this little short 11-inch hatchet handle for these kind of little small hatchets. I forget what he called them, but I've seen them around. They're these kind of these little teeny hatchets. And they don't come with a kerf cut into the top of the eye, but they come with a little metal wedge. And with the idea specifically that you're not going to cut a kerf. And so you're not putting in a wooden wedge because it's so small. You just like put the head on, throw your little metal wedge in there and it opens it up and holds it on just enough. How about that? He was like, because he was saying it'd be kind of tough to cut a wedge in there to fit it in for such a small eye. I was like, oh, weird. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But something else. All right. Well, recommendations this week. I want to recommend someone who I've actually recommended in the past. And his Instagram is Gallardo Knives. So that is at @GALLARDO_knives. And he's been kind of out of action for quite a while. His most recent post was a couple of days ago, January 20th, but his post before that, his most recent post before that was from June 5th, 2021. So it's been whatever that is, like six or seven months, or I guess that's more than that. It's like, 8 or 9 months. So, so he posted again, so it's good to see him back. So if you don't know Gyotter Knives, go check him out on Instagram. Really good knife maker. And actually his knife called the Atom is the knife that I based the shape of the little bone handle knife that I made for Corinne, which we did a video of. So bone handle knife, if you look at that, that's based off the Atom. I think I actually shout him out in the video because I used his design, which I really like, the Atom design. But it's good to see him back. He posted a picture of just holding up some different handle scales, you know, different wood combinations and stuff. So it's good that he'll be back and doing some stuff and hopefully posting. So head over to Instagram, go give him a follow, tell him we sent you over, and go tell him you're happy to see him back. So Gyotter Knives on Instagram.
That bone handle knife was not a fun one to make. Just the smell.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
During right, making exactly. That was brutal. And then also just slicing and trying to find the right piece of bone that we could.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because we were using that bone that we found in the woods when we found, that I found with Corinne. So it was like part of the leg bone of the whitetail, but it was kind of small. So we had to we kept cutting different pieces and got just enough. But it did turn out really nice.
Yeah, it was cool.
Corinne really likes it. And, you know, and just like that, I'm really drawn to bone handle knives. And I actually got some bone recently from New York Shed Antlers. That's his, I think that's his Instagram name. But I got some stuff from him, so I got the antler pieces for the Bowie knife, which we'll still have to work on. But then I got some scales as well, some bone scales and some other ones that I'll cut down to make bone knife. But there's just something really nice about that, like kind of creamy, somewhat translucent, organic, you know, like different colors running through it. That bone look, I really like it. So yeah,
there you go.
Check them out.
I guess mine, I was going to do one of the videos I watched, but really if you're looking for a 3D printer, I'll just say what mine was.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the, Creality Ender 3. So just look for Ender 3.
Creality?
Yeah.
Okay.
E-N-D-E-R, Ender 3, and it's version 2. They have like a Ender 3, they have an Ender 3 Pro, and then they have a Ender 3 V2. And you can get an Ender 3, which is like a 5-year-old printer now, or a 6-year-old. But you probably get that one for like $160.
Oh yeah,
dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Ender Pro probably around $200, and then I was like going between the Enders and another brand, and then Amazon must have heard me, and then they had like one of those lightning sales, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I was like the Ender 3 V2. For I think it was like $230 or something, which usually it's like $280 or $300. So
oh, nice.
That's what I got it for. But it's
crazy.
It's great. I mean, there's those printers, and then people are using resin printers. But
yeah,
resin's messy. It's harder to get a bigger build surface, you know, for the right price.
Right.
It's so like no smell, easy to work with.
Right.
The layer or PLA printing or whatever they call it.
Right. Yeah.
It's much nicer. You can get really cool things, cool tools. I mean, I've had success. You do have to put more building into it because it's like a Chinese machine. It comes in bits and pieces, you know?
Right.
So you got to hope everything works right off the bat. And you have to take a few hours at least to build it
a couple days.
To build it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a pain without the self-balancing platform, because that'd be really nice. Because you got to get that right on that first layer to get it to lay well. But I've kind of gotten it down now. And
nice.
Actually, look for stuff online if you're going to get it. There's these replacement springs you can get right away.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dirt cheap on Amazon. I think they're like $8. but you get a million springs, you know, so I could make probably 10 Ender 3s now, you know. I only needed 4, but they send you like whatever, 20, you know?
A whole bag. Yeah, right. Exactly.
So they're like, they're flat springs made for compression, made for holding it. So, you know, you kind of balance it, and I've kind of been rebalancing every time just to make sure, but, I've got it down now where I can balance it in about a minute, get it right. And then, start the prints, and it's been great.
So you just have to like, do you check your, you know, x-axis or whatever, you come down, check a few spots on the board to make sure they all come to zero the same.
Yeah, well, the bed has 4 wheels, screws on each one on each corner to raise it up and down,
right,
to get it level with your head, so you get your head to go to its home point, and from there you want it about a paper's width away from the surface,
right,
to get a good because you don't want it just to sit on the surface,
right, because
then it'll peel off. You want it to squish just a little bit, not too much, you know, where it's spreading it too thin like paint,
right?
You want it just to squish down a little bit, so it's basically one piece of paper's
right
width. So it just takes a minute, you kind of do it, put a paper there, slide it to the other corner, put a paper there, and obviously you change one corner, the other goes up or down, you know,
with right.
So you just kind of check each corner maybe 4 times, and then you're good to go.
Nice. Right on. That's cool. What was the website you were mentioning earlier where people can find the STL files or the different?
Oh, that's right. The it's on, I forget the name. Wait.
On Thingiverse or something?
Oh, you mean for the mugs? Well, Thingiverse, yes, for pretty much everything. And this is where I found it. And then they had a link to their site where you could buy more stuff.
Right.
But they still have free mugs, and it's called ARS Morendi, Morendi, 3D. You could probably just look up Mystic Mugs.
Okay.
And they have a whole website of kind of weird mugs and stuff, and
nice,
all types.
That's sweet. One of the things that Bob was talking about in his video was that PLA has kind of a low low melting point, you know. So he was saying for for making pieces in his car, if it's like sitting out in the summer locked inside, it can get up, you know, over 100 degrees inside the vehicle. He made this like console that held a bunch of buttons to be able to play sounds and stuff outside of his range, Land Rover, and the like that console, that box has kind of like shifted and warped a little bit from being in the car for a long time, you know. So he said there's another type of filament that you can use that's a higher melting point. I don't remember off the top of my head, but you know.
Right.
It might be worth looking into that if you're going to do something, you know, that might be in anything that's warmer. But, I mean, if you're just printing things, you know, like the way you're doing it now more as a hobby, you know,
right.
then PLA is perfectly fine.
Yeah
and cheap.
PLA, I think, is there because it's the easiest to work with. Mm-hmm. And you can actually get some. Apparently, the stuff I buy, it's, like, kind of organic. So that that doesn't give it good strength numbers, probably, you know,
right.
You're like, oh, yeah. So you can, but you know, for what it is, it's fine. There's all types of weird different filaments to use,
right? Yeah,
and they have all a million different settings. So
because they have like wood and stuff now, things that are
like a wood filament. I think, you know, it's like a blended thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, of course. So it's like an epoxy or something. Everything's together, so it's got a similar melting point as PLA. So it's just going through the nozzle, it melts as it's pushing through and stuff.
And then they have stuff that can be flexible,
That's
so
cool.
You could do like, you know, hexagon pattern stretchy things.
Right. Yeah.
You go around and do stuff or belts or things like that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, you can check that out. I'll put links for everything, all of our recommendations, as always, into the description of the podcast, so you can find them there. And, it was a fun time looking for stuff over the weekend. I really enjoyed it, and hanging out with you guys for dinner and trying to figure out what that little thing was that you made for me. I was determined. I was like, I know I can figure this out. You know, like, it's... it looks like something I know. I just couldn't like put my finger on it. You know, I was like, there's something, all these things have a specific purpose and I can tell that it's something that I should know, but I don't. And it's like, I just have to get to it. So I think what kind of, what I saw in my head was a similar one that I have of that type of thing, but it's just it's like a flat metal, bottom, and it kind of rounds up on the sides and has a handle, and you like clamp it together, but you wrap a piece of you know, sandpaper up over the edges and you clamp it down on. So I have a few different things like that. So I think it like popped into my head, that thing. It was like bing, and I was like, oh, that's it, you know, like that's what it is. It's like a little version of that, and it's like different on the different sides to be able to like tighten on one side and this, you know, a rounded angle on the other side and stuff. So
yeah,
it's cool. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Episode 76 of the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. If you haven't already, please go over to Instagram and follow us both there, and we'll be posting pictures of the stuff that we've talked about on today's podcast there so you can see them. And if you are listening and you already guessed correctly for the objects that are in the pictures, then congratulations, you've won. And, you know, I'd also go over to YouTube and follow us there. We put up a new video, we're maybe a week out now, of the new Revolution Grinder that I have, the Gen 4 Revolution Grinder that Brian House sent up. We set that up and built it and talked about all the awesome aspects of why it's such a great grinder. So go check that out. That video is doing okay. So go and check it out. Leave us a comment. Leave us a like. Let us know what you think. If you haven't already watched it, we'd appreciate it. And go over and subscribe there as well. And then also, if you want to support us, we always really appreciate any support as far as just, you know, listening to the podcast, watching the videos, sharing it with your friends. And if you want to support us, you can always head over to patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship and support us there. And for all of our patrons over there, we really, really appreciate your support. I always say it makes a big difference, but the difference that it makes, it's not even the money. It's the, like, it's the fact that people are willing to support things that other people do just because they think they're interesting, and maybe they believe in like who you are, and they're drawn to do that. And that's it, really, that, like, that little bit more, that extra support is very humbling, you know. And that's the difference that it makes. It's like people are willing to, like, throw us a couple bucks each month just because they think that what we're doing is interesting. And then they know that, like, that kind of helps us out and gives us that drive to keep doing it and shows a little bit in a different way what type of difference or effect that things that we're doing are making on other people's lives, which is that's the huge difference. It really makes a difference in being part of this, like, thing that hopefully is inspiring and making, you know, and getting people to do things and make things and flip that maker switch on and do some stuff. So,
right.
So when I say that each week that it makes a big difference, it really is that, like, the difference between just a thumbs up and then someone who supports you with comments or with, you know, some money here and there or whatever, like, all those little things make a difference. And it really makes, it drives us to keep doing this, what we're doing. So thank you all so much for that support in any way that you're supporting us. All right, Devin. Always a pleasure. Everybody else, it's great chatting with you guys. Hopefully you all enjoyed this episode, and we will talk to you next time.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.